Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit and creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today I have one of my favorite guests back for a second visit. Her name is Becky Galli, and she is an author, mother, columnist, and autism advocate. And like I did on our first interview, I'm just going to read the introduction to the book that we're going to be talking about, which is called Morning Fuel. And this is just to give you a sense of Becky's life so that you'll know we're all be on the same page. So here's her introduction. Some would say, sorry, I think I'm going to put my glasses on. Hold on. It's a little blurry. Okay. Some would say life has not been kind to me. At age 20, I lost my 17-year-old brother. Two of my four children had special needs. One of my two sons died at age 15. And at 38, 9 days after my divorce was finalized, I was paralyzed by transverse myelitis, a rare inflammation of the spinal cord that affects one in a million. More than once, it's been hard to find the strength to power through and live fully in this life I did not choose. And on that note, we're going to welcome Becky Galli. How do you feel when you hear that? Do you like?
It's like, yeah, that's all true. It's all true.
It's all true.
It's been a lot to live through, but I've learned a lot. That's for darn sure. But it's really good to see you again.
Yes, it is. And I've been, doing my homework before the interview, and I've been reading Becky's book, which is going to be released soon. I don't know if it'll have been released, but I think it will have been released 2 days before this interview premieres. So, Morning Fuel by Rebecca Faye Smith Galli. And I was telling Becky that I was turning, when you turn down a page that you want to remember, I was turning down every page. So I was like, okay, this is ridiculous. I'm not going to be able to find them. And so I started turning down the bottoms of the pages so that they would stick out. Then I started taking notes in my phone. So anyway, what you had something to say about that you were going to tell us?
Yes. Yeah. So I sent you an ARC, an advanced reader copy. So you got the version that was before all the edits, and I'd gotten similar feedback that, turning down pages, wouldn't take notes. And so in the final copy, there's a whole section in the back, a lined section, and I list 8 topics, and I give, for example, one is living with uncertainty. And then I give the readings that are associated with that. Another one is, staying positive, letting go, on anger, on laughing matters, and what's the other one? Coping, coping through the holidays. That's what that's about. So it gives you kind of, if you thought, what did she write about that? Then you can go back and then take little notes. So I hope that'll help you. I'll have to send you the fresh copy when it's off the press.
Yes. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Because some of them, I was like, oh, I want to remember that. I want to remember that. But then it was like, I want to remember everything. So how am I going to separate it out?
Thank you. I'm glad there's so many things you like to remember. That makes me feel good.
Yes. And the writing is so beautiful. Like, So Becky also has a Thoughtful Thursdays, and she just sent me one, and it was so, I mean, not only does it make you think, but it's so beautifully written. Like the way you, I don't know if you brought nature, I'm confused where I read which, but you bring nature in and you just, just the way you develop a thought or an idea is just so, it's just so one, like you really have a talent. I don't know if you were that way innately or if it, if you've developed it, but really it's just beautiful. You know, some things I don't want to read. It's like, but this one, you know, I would read one because you're supposed to technically read one a day, but I was like, okay, let me read 10. And I just kept going. Like they were so interesting. Some are shorter than others. Some are 3 pages. Some are, you know, one, but they're just so good. So I highly recommend this. It's out on press and they can get it. Let's tell them where they can get it right now.
Anywhere books are sold. So, you know, online at your local bookstore. So it's distributed by Simon & Schuster. So we're in good shape for distribution. So I hope they'll easily find it. If they don't, they can email me on my website, BeckyGalley.com, and I'll help them find it.
Okay, yeah. And so BeckyGalley.com, BeckyGalley.com, and it's right there, right there. So you can't miss it. All right. So now, well, I want them to know. So as we said in the intro, two of Becky's children were special needs. And one of the things that was in her first book that we learned about, and if you haven't read this one, Rethinking Possible, this, you got to read it. Just, you got to get it. It's well-written. It's Becky's stories, and it will inspire you and give you strength, hope, courage to face whatever you're facing. But one of the things was when you had the special need, why don't you tell them the story? Because I don't remember the details, how you started that organization, Pathfinders for Autism.
Yeah, so my daughter, Madison, was diagnosed with autism. She's now 32. And so this is, you know, in the mid-90s, where not a whole lot was known about autism. A friend, she was about 5 years old at the time, and she was going to a specialized summer school program for kids with autism. Really lucky in the Baltimore area, we had that kind of outreach at that time. And a fellow classmate of hers sent home a flyer in her little Barney backpack announcing come see how Mason has learned to read, this therapy. And I was all about that because at the time Madison had very limited words, if any at all. So we went to that person's home, and it was Polly and BJ Surhoff, who BJ was a baseball player on the Orioles. And it was a real honor to be asked to his home, much less learn about this therapy that was working with their child. And so that night we learned about the therapy, and that therapy, we began to use it with Madison, and it worked. She began to say names and could identify her colors and shapes and numbers and that kind of thing. She never got totally fluent in conversationally, but because of that therapy at that time, we decided as parents that we would form an organization, because we hadn't learned about that therapy from a doctor. We hadn't learned about it from an educator, which is traditionally where you get help, right? We learned about it from a fellow parent. And so a group of parents formed an organization called Pathfinders for Autism. And that was in 2000. So we're coming up on 25 years of being in that business of helping parents help one another and discovering resources. And of course, the internet's caught up with us. You know, we're kind of like the Google for autism in terms of resources, but we've also developed resources to educate the community. So we have training for first responders. You know, you're encountering someone with autism. How do you communicate with them? We have training for medical professionals. The ER, your next patient, has autism. You know, what are the different ways to communicate with them? So it's been a really great endeavor to take that little flyer of connection and expand it so that many people have benefited. Where I think we serve up to 20,000 people a year with our services. We also have free family events that are designated to be kind of inclusive, where we've trained the staff in the Baltimore Aquarium and the Science Center and the zoo, where they can feel comfortable bringing their entire family, including one with autism, and the staff has been trained. So it's been a big part of my life, a part to kind of give back and keep me focused on something besides my paralysis too, if I'm honest about it. You know, I was paralyzed. My kids were 3, 4, 7, and 9. And, you know, when you're diagnosed with transverse myelitis, a third of the people get full recovery, a third get partial recovery, and a third don't have any recovery at all. So I was very hopeful for a long time, but that waiting was exhausting. And it when I look back at when I was writing the memoir, I look back, that's exactly when I was invited to the Surhoff's house to learn about this therapy. So instead of, you know, kind of twiddling my thumbs or being very anxious about my situation, I was able to put that energy into doing something for my child. And kind of that Pathfinders was a great outlet for me. And I think a lot of times that happens. Sometimes we need something to do in the meantime, mm-hmm. you know, when we're waiting for clarity or something to come that we have a focus for good that we can do while we're waiting to figure out what's really next, you know, for the reality to become apparent.
Mm. So if people wanted to find, is it only in the Baltimore area, that group, or is it everywhere? How
well,
do they find
for,
it? Yeah.
Pathfindersforautism.org.
Okay.
Pathfindersforautism.org. And we are a Maryland-based organization. However, we have a really fabulous website that is available to anyone. And we also have social media presence, a really strong social media presence as well. And then we have, you know, the 800 number you can call. So we don't ever turn anybody away. We're happy to help anyone that we can. In fact, some states have reached out to us for our training programs, and we've done our programs in other states.
So who works with you on that? Like, is it a paid foundation, or is it just volunteers?
No, it's a staff. We staffed it up beginning in, I think that was 2001 was our first paid person. And now I think we have a staff. I think it's 8.
Wow.
Yeah.
But and where do they get the funding? Sorry.
We fundraise all the time. In fact, you know, we got the 25th anniversary coming up, but we're self-supported. You know, we apply for grants, and we do a lot of fundraising ourselves. We don't charge for our events for families.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yep. And the people who are involved, do they all have children with autism or not necessarily?
Not necessarily, but quite a few of them do.
Okay.
It's not a prerequisite, but.
But some people are just called to help, right?
Hmm?
That's their thing. Wow. Amazing.
Yeah.
So are you like on the board or something? Like what's your,
I am.
You are.
I think I'm on the executive committee. My role is it's the secretary of the organization, but I haven't rotated off yet. It's still a very big passion of mine.
Yes.
I think I'm technically called a founding board member.
Nice. So yeah. If somebody, let's say somebody up here in Connecticut, you know, wanted information, they could just look at the website or reach out or something. So that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Because I know there's a lot of people who say people don't know a lot about this, and people, they don't know how to treat people, or if somebody's, you know, somebody was saying, you know, if somebody was having a tantrum, maybe it was in your book that I read it, you know, they don't know what to do. So any education, I think, is so valuable for the public. And right, you don't want to, if you don't understand, how can you treat them? You know what I mean? The right way. If you don't know how, then you can't.
Right.
Yeah. Good. Well, thank you for doing that. That's very helpful. And I'll make sure that's in the show notes so people can find you. Awesome. Okay. Let's see. We were, you know, also, can you talk about, I know what you're a columnist, and I don't know if you started that when your father passed his on to you, or you had already been one already before.
Well, it kind of all came about after my paralysis, because I was never a writer. I was in sales and marketing. I had a career with IBM for 10 years, and then I was in some marketing with another organization. And then after the paralysis, this was 1997 when the internet was kind of new. And after I got home and was waiting to figure out, would I walk again? I really thought I would. A friend of mine introduced me to email, and I started writing about my escapades from the wheelchair. People were like, you know, what happened? And in particular, I think we talked about this the last time, my friend Scott, an old high school buddy, said, emailed me and said, really, what, you know, I haven't seen you in, you know, 10 years or so, you know, what's happened here? And so when I took him through my life, you know, with all the kids and the paralysis, the divorce, whatever, I realized I was telling him my stories. And so when I would tell a story, I would send it to my sister, and she said, this is really interesting. And she'd send it to somebody else. And so little by little, I would create these stories of, this is what happened. And so I developed the email. It was a, you know, literally copy paste, put somebody email in there. We didn't have blogs. We didn't have any way to do that consistently. So, then somebody recommended, she said, you know, maybe you should put this in, submit this to the Baltimore Sun, because I think this is a really cool story. I was playing soccer, of all things, with Peter, who was five. And so I would guard the garage door back and forth with my wheelchair. So he would try to shoot, and I'd roll over there, and he'd hit my wheelchair and it'd bounce in. And then he would shoot and it'd hit my wheelchair and bounce in. I would score, you know, because of his errant shot, the way that, so it was crazy. We were going back and forth. So I wrote a story about it. So my friend edited and we sent it in. The Baltimore Sun published it. So that was in 2001. That was the first time it was published. And because of that column, I submitted another column about my son wrestling at age five. And so that was published in the then North County News, which became the Towson Times, which is a monthly newspaper, local monthly. And so they said, you want to write a regular column. So for 12 years, I did Towson Times, and so that's kind of what started this whole columnist thing. And then I did columns for different people. So I was never a writer. I just kind of backed into it because I was trying to keep my mind going and create connections with people, because I couldn't get out as much as I used to. So It's just funny. You know, looking back, it's funny how it all kind of worked out. And then it became, maybe you should write a book. And so I took the collection of columns and I took the history that I put together talking to my friend Scott, and that became the origins of the book. And here we are. And actually, Morning Fuel is a continuation of that, because it wound up after, I started in 2001, so that's like 24 years of writing columns. So all of them, over 400, are on my website. And then I had my father's columns when he passed in 2003, he had written a column called Looking Homeward for a West Virginia newspaper. And so he asked the West Virginia, this is a very, very poignant part. He literally was in the hospital and called his editor in West Virginia and said, would you give Becky a shot at continuing my column, Looking Homeward? And he said, sure. And so for a while there, I had two columns. I would write Dad's columns and I would write the ones here in Maryland. And as I was thinking about, you know, what I wanted to write next, two things came to mind. The first was people say, have asked me through the years after writing Rethinking Possible, you know, it's kind of one loss after another is what it seems like, but somehow I just keep rolling through it, right? Basically, you know, how do you do it? Where do you get, you know, the strength to keep going, or is there anything that you do consistently? And I think the biggest thing for me is structure, you know, and when I get kind of knocked down, it's like, what is the structure that keeps me that you just do that next thing, you know, that no matter what, you just do that. It's like brushing your teeth. You got to get up, you got to brush your teeth, you know, you just, what's the next thing? And I developed this pattern of doing morning readings where I would draw on three or four books that I'd liked and enjoyed. And they were just short readings, but they were inspirational, a lot of quotes. And so that was part of my morning ritual. And I thought, well, I'll do my morning fuel. You know, it is my morning fuel. And so I had that idea. And then plus all these columns that my father had written and my had written, it's like they all had kind of become these foundational stories for me. You know, if I get in a tough spot, I could think of one of Dad's stories that would help me, or think of a quote that would help me. So I kind of combined those goals and created this book. It was a lot harder than I thought, though. 366 of anything is a lot.
Yeah. Well, they're great. Are some of them your dad's, or are they all yours?
Well, some of them are dad's that I'm in. You know, he was a minister, so our family life sometimes became his sermon illustrations, which became his call. So that's kind of how that worked. But yes, so they're either, some of them are his and some of them are mine, but they're ones that I've retold since he originally told them. Yeah. So yeah,
they're great stories. Two questions and before we move on, did you, when you were doing the two different things, did you do the same one for both, or did you write two each week?
It was each month I wrote two different ones.
Okay. So you didn't put the same one in both. Okay. And the other question is, maybe it's none of my business, but were these paid positions? Did they pay you for this?
No, Dad was funny. He said, you know, I never got paid for those. And I, so he said, she's going to charge you double. And so, so I got paid nothing for those two. I did for, the Baltimore papers. Yes.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. I was just curious. I didn't know people get paid. Okay. So one, let me see, which is the one that I put back the bottom. Let's see. Here it is. Okay. This is the one. I don't know why this one stood out, but it says a little encouragement goes a long way. And it talks about people criticizing. So the last quote, or the last four lines are, this was, as William Arthur Ward, noted American author, reminds us, flatter me and I may not believe you. Criticize me and I may not like you. Ignore me and I may not forgive you. Encourage me and I will not forget you.
Amen. That's all I got to say to that one.
And, you know, it's so, obvious when you see it on print. But I mean, I didn't grow up. Your family was very encouraging. Your dad was amazing. And like the story about when you were making ice cream
Milkshake.
and
That's one of my favorites.
yeah. So she was making ice cream and somehow it was taking 4 hours. It wasn't supposed to. She called her dad instead of saying, you know, what'd you do wrong? Which my father would have done. He said, oh, serve milkshakes. So that was like, that's where, I don't know if that was part of this one, but it's the same type of thing. I know I always say I had three critical parents, father, mother, and sister.
Oh.
Yes. And it was like, I was pretty, you know, I did pretty well. I was a great student and athlete and musician, all this stuff. But I never felt good about myself because it was always like, well, why didn't you do this? Or why didn't you do this? They might have been kidding. Might have been my dad's sense of humor, but I never really felt like it was ever enough. You know, I would look at what wasn't there instead of what was. So I think this is so great, especially for children, you know, to encourage them. I mean, I took piano lessons and I never practiced. I just didn't like it, you know. But one time my mother went in to talk to my piano teacher and she said, you know, why do you always make her cry? Because he used to, I don't know if I told you this, but he used to record me. And then I heard how terrible I was. Like I thought I was getting away with not practicing, but I was not. And he would record me and I would cry, please stop. You know, anyway, why are you making her cry? And he goes, well, because she has talent. And I was like, this was the senior year in high school. I'm like, no one ever told me that. No one
Wow.
ever told me I had talent. I might have practiced. You know what I mean? I was just kind of showing up, doing my thing. I was a kid, right? But it was like that one thing. I always think, wow, what if I had heard that, you know, 7 or 10 years earlier that I had talent? I might have become a contender, you know? Like who knows? But it was, you know, instead, I know in our house, you were encouraged in a certain way, but you were also, you know, not. And I think, you know, if we could do that for our kids, I'm sure you did, right? Were you? Did you? You must have done that, right? Because that's what you learned. You didn't
I
tear them
hope so.
apart. You didn't tear them apart, right?
It's like what they say, parenting's a contact sport. You know, it's you just do what you got to do there, and you hope. I hope I was encouraging, but I don't know how I was perceived. I tried to be, but you know, it's you're right about that, especially in. You know, when it comes to your talents and you want your kids to move to their strengths, we all sh should, I guess, really move to our strengths. But the writing thing, you know, I had I think it was a ninth grade teacher that gave me some feedback about my writing that made me think I would, you know, that was an impossibility for me because I was 16, my dog had died, and I wrote this poem about my dog. And dad said, Becky, this is really good. And so I took it to my teacher, and she looked at it and she said two words. She said, it's morose and it's maudlin. And I didn't know what maudlin meant at the time. I looked it up, and it's like overly sentimental. And I'm like, oh, great.
Oh,
Okay.
what? That's good.
But anyway, she said to me, she said, honey, you are talented in a lot of areas, but this is not one of them. And so I was in grief with my dog, you know, number one. And then she tells me that I can't, my heart that I put on the page there was, you know, overly sentimental. So, and then I'll go to college and I'm doing this essay. And the guy tells me, Becky, you have no structure about this, you know, this is the straight A student that goes in. Yeah, it was a hard college, but yeah, straight in says no structure here. And I got like a C. I could not believe it. I don't think I'd ever gotten a C in my life. So I was like, writing is not for me. That's it. So And then I'm kind of back into it with the paralysis, and you go through all this. Am I really good? You always have that critic, that self-critic. So it's like the evidence outweighed of, apparently I write well enough for people to read it at this point. I hesitate to say I'm a good writer, but I enjoy writing, and it does what I want it to do, which is connect me to people. And if, I think that's the thing. If I've had to live this life and there's something I've learned that can help other people, why not give it a shot? Just give it a shot. So I keep doing it.
Yeah, that's great. That's why I wrote my first one. Because I was like, you know what? If I was so stuck and I could get myself free, and it took a few years, but I did, then I was like, you know what? If one person can get inspired to not stay where it's really not healthy for them, not nurturing their soul. If I can do it, then someone else can do it. And that's really why I wrote it. I mean, I did some things, that maybe people might judge me for, but probably do it again. So, but that, so it took something to put it out there, but
Yes.
I don't know if it took you something, but it was like tough, but I just did it. I don't know. I wanted to write a book, and I just kept going. Mine took, how long did your first one take? Mine took 7 years because I didn't know what the heck I was doing.
I agree. Mine took 20.
20. Okay. All right. Well, you beat me there. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So the second one didn't take quite that long. It was a good thing. I don't think it would have made it in print,
Yeah.
but yeah, it's the process, isn't it?
Guess the point is don't give up,
Yeah.
right? Because here we have the proof that Becky can write, right? Two books. I mean, anybody can write a book these days. I mean, you just go publish it on Amazon. But you know what? It does take something. A lot of people, when I was writing a book, they said, "Oh, I want to write one too." I'm like, okay. Like that's what they would say, but I don't know if they were doing anything about it. So the point is, if you want to write a book, write it. And
Yeah.
what I learned was, everything I wrote in the first version was thrown out. So don't worry about it. You're going to rewrite it so many times, you're not even going to recognize it. But I think that, like, at times I was trying to get the first sentence so perfect, I never got going past it.
Yep, editing is a large part of writing.
Yeah, I never knew that, but it is. And you grow, right? Don't you think you grew through it or processed or, that first book helped me get past, a lot of stuff in my marriage, that I was blaming myself for, blaming him for. And by the end, I could see, you know what? We were both responsible. So it was a journey. It really was a journey. And it was valuable, very valuable to write it, even if you don't publish it. It helps to write. So anyway, we're going to take our commercial break, believe it or not, with a word from our sponsor, and then we'll be right back with more about morning fuel. All right, see you in a minute.
Has social-emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. KIKORI.
Do you ever feel like you can't say what you really want to say? Or that you're stuck or in a holding pattern in your relationships, career, personal life, or finances? Are there things you want in life that you've given up on? Are you resigned that this is as good as it's going to get? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Hillary Burns, host of the Getting Real with Hillary show, has the solution you need. Hillary is a published author of 3 books and has a program called the Getting Real Process. This process frees you from what is holding you back, allowing you to create a life you love. Don't believe it? It is hard to believe that it could work, isn't it? The proof is that hundreds of Hillary's clients have used the Getting Real Process and are now free to create whatever they want in relationships, career, finances, enjoying life, or just loving themselves more. So go to realtalkwithhillary.com and order Hillary's book, Real Talk, and set up a conversation.
And thank you, as always, to our sponsor, KokoriApp.com. If you want to bring experiential social-emotional learning to your schools, teams, or businesses, go to KokoriApp.com. They are really taking off. They're revising their app. It's just so much fun and really so valuable for people of all ages because the exercises help you connect and connect to a part of you that we don't normally connect to. So I highly recommend it, KokoriApp.com. And as always, my books, I won't take a lot of time because I want to bring Becky back, but this is the memoir I was talking about, The Second Piece of French Toast. If you feel stuck in a marriage, my tagline was, if marriage was my dream, why was I numbing myself? And I certainly learned that through the book. This one, If You Don't Speak Up, as the commercial said, Real Talk, it was not easy for me. I definitely did not do it in that first book. Didn't speak up, but it takes something, but it also gives you freedom. And then this one is just tools and techniques for what I call the left side of life, where everything looks bleak, no possibility, something's wrong with me, something's wrong with the world. These are tools and techniques to get to the other side where things are happy, anything is possible, and you have joy and fun again. So this one, if you want it, you can find them all on Amazon. All right, and now we bring our featured guest back to the studio. Welcome back, Becky. All right. So now we're going to get more to the book because that's what we're promoting. Her book just came out and you can find it anywhere books are sold. All right. Here's one. All Fired Up. So this one was about one of Becky's children, right? Brittany, her student who was her teacher who was teaching algebra. Right. And she told the kids they could call her up until midnight. And she was so enthusiastic about algebra. Right. So what do you think was the lesson on that one?
You know, once again, just the role that teachers have in our kids' lives, you know, and she was just amazing, really high energy. And Brittany that year got most improved math student. So it was just amazing how that she inspired Brittany. And that's so key, that positive momentum, you know. It's encouragement, but it's also availability, you know, that their problems would matter enough that a teacher would make themselves that available. So it was impressive. She'd been there for a long time and all the kids loved her.
Yeah. I'm looking for the next one. Yeah. I mean, and to make algebra exciting, you know, it really is the teacher, what they bring to it. Okay. Here's one. When Words Hurt. You remember that one? Of course you do. You wrote it, but.
Yes. Tell me more about that quote. What did I say on that one?
Well, that was when you had, you were bringing Matthew in and the woman was.
Oh.
You said, you make me feel like a bad mother. And she said, you make yourself feel, not I. And you were really mad and you went to your father and. Yeah.
That was right. Matthew was my son that had seizures. He was in a specialized hospital for a good bit, and we had access to a social worker who was supposed to help us, you know, navigate what to do next. And she, her questioning of me at first I thought was just to gather information, you know, did you try this? Have you had this, had this experience, that experience? And I would say yes to some, no to some, but she kept quizzing me, and to the point where I felt like I was being judged. And so I said to her, you know, you make me feel like a bad mother. And then she said to me, you know, I can't make you feel anyway. You make yourself feel. And at the time, I didn't appreciate that very much. So, of course, I got mad and left and probably burst into tears once I got home. And then when I talked to my father about it, he's like, well, you know, you really do decide how you're going to respond to things. You might not help control your feelings per se, but I said, Dad, you know, she's supposed to be a helping professional, and here she is making me feel worse. She's supposed to help me make feel better. So I think the lesson for me was, again, about this. Things happen to us. We're going to have feelings. We need to be honest about those feelings. You know, that's how she made me feel. Now, what I do about that feeling, you know, I get to decide, you know, do I react to her? Do I respond to her? Do I try to learn from her? What am I going to, how am I going to respond to that? But I must say, given the context of that, of what her goal is, as a helping professional, I didn't rely on her for more expertise. Let's just put it that way.
But you you said to your father you wanted to get her fired, and he kind of calmed you down and was like,
Yeah. I don't know that I ever escalated that in any point, because it's like, what's the point? Right. If she can't help me, who can? That's the point. And so, but yeah, I did want to get her fired.
All right, here's a short one. There was treading water, but this one, load carrying. We can carry our struggles with confidence or with hesitation, with hope or with despair, with respect or fear, with grace or with blame. We can keep our burdens from breaking us by choosing how we carry them.
Yes. I do think that's, you know, it's easy to do the woe is me thing and kind of let them bury you or be apparent in even your countenance or your availability to engage with people. It's easy for me to just kind of park in a corner and be very quiet. Because when I choose to engage, it's, you know, it's the lady in the wheelchair kind of thing. It's like, I kind of stick out. I do. You know, if you can, for me, I think I think it's actually January 1st, the entry is about choosing to sparkle, you know, choosing to smile more, choosing to engage with the greeters at Sam's and Walmart, or, you know, the people that are checking you out. It's kind of an act your way into a new way of thinking kind of approach that I have to take often. You know, sometimes I don't feel like doing things, but I feel like it's important to do them. And it's like, the more I do, the more I feel better about it. So it's I try to carry them lightly or let them not be the biggest part of my life. one of the things Dad used to tell us when we had something that was annoying us or worrying us or we couldn't solve it immediately. He said, you know, have shelves in your mind. And when you've got something that's difficult or uncertain or you don't know what to do with it, work on it for a while and then put it on a shelf in your head, you know, not to ignore it, but to just give yourself space to have other things in there and then come back to it at a later time when you're better prepared to deal with it or when life has actually changed. You know, sometimes what's so important that very day, the next day isn't as important just because time has moved through and the circumstances have changed. It's not even you or with the issue. It's like the circumstances and you can see it a little differently.
Yeah. One of them that I put in my phone this time was the one bad moment.
Oh yeah.
There is no such thing as a bad day, just bad moments that we choose to take with us all day long.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see like the other day even today I woke up and my neck, I couldn't move. And I was like, oh my God, you know, so I spent hours in bed going, you know, which person am I going to go to? And oh my God, and they're mad at me because I didn't go to them anyway, you know, like this whole thing, wasting all this energy. Anyway, I went to the gym and then I was fine. I don't even feel it anymore. But I had projected the whole day as, you know, it was like, or like the other day, I didn't feel well, something I ate. And so, you know, and then I was in I could hear myself like, like in this story of, but then I was like, oh, it's actually okay right now. Like it wasn't the whole day. It was just a few moments that I let color the rest of the day, you know, right. And it stopped, but I was still internally moaning. You know, it wasn't even there anymore. So anyway, so the one
and Hillary, that wasn't mine. I was quoting somebody on that. So
you're not right. But you do say it's hard to discount problems. They seem to fester and gain importance, especially when we ruminate on them. And then the last sentence is we have 24 hours in the day, no need to taint all of them with one bad moment.
Right.
That's you.
Right.
You? Okay.
That was, like the one bad moment all day long. That was a new thought for me because it was like,
oh,
yeah.
I thought that was great. The one about, well, there's so many that I like. There's the right on time, and then there's impress ourselves. Which one would you like to talk about?
The impress yourselves was really pretty funny. So through the years, I had many caregivers, and one was a young man who was in my son's school, and he was a coach, and he had, he was coaching soccer. And he was telling me that he had developed a few plays for the team. And they used the plays, they used his plays and they scored and they won the game. And he was so excited about it. And he was just, he just came in the kitchen. I can see him right now. And he says, you know, I impressed myself today. So it was just so genuine and so authentic, you know, and so exuberant, you know, and I thought, you know, what a great thing to impress yourself, you know, to heck with the coaches, to heck with the kids, you know, because he knew that for himself, you know, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
So it's kind of become kind of a test in my life because some things that I do don't seem very extraordinary, but for me, I know they're a big deal. And I'm sure all of us have that, you know, that some things are harder for others. And so I think we have to give yourself credit for those things, even if they're not super obvious. So I always think about that. It's not what did you impress yourself? Did you meet your own expectations? Because sometimes our expectations for ourselves are a lot higher than what other people's are, or sometimes it takes us a lot more effort than what's apparent. So yeah, great. Jeff was great.
Okay, I already lost it. Wait, did we do one bad moment? Yes, we did that. We did impress her. Okay, the right on time. I thought that was a great story. when you were going, you were speaking and you had planned it all and you had it all timed to the second.
See, for when I go to do any kind of public speaking or book signing or talk or anything like that, I have to prepare because I don't, people define wheelchair accessible very differently. And I have to make sure that I can get behind the podium or I can reach the microphone or, you know, all the buttons I need to push for the slides are available. And so I had done all this and done all the prepared work for this one book talk. And I got my times mixed up and I thought I was supposed to be there at 6:30. Well, I was supposed to leave at 6:30. And so I was late because I was, anyway, it was like a half hour. No, I thought I was going to be late, but I wound up being, because I left early.
Right. You thought you'd be early. Yeah.
But yeah.
So when she got there, she was all flustered and everyone just kept saying, you're right on time. You're right on time. And that was so kind, right? They could have been like, where have you been? Rah, 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 rah. You know?
You know, I thought you were going to be here early. They didn't judge me. They just welcomed me. And it was great.
They're right on time. Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Okay. One of the things, it just seems, and I can't find the one, but you know, what I wrote down was kindness, compassion, and encouragement. But also one of the things that you embody for me is that no matter how hard it is, you know, you allow yourself to feel angry or sad or whatever it is, you allow it. And you know what, when we were talking, you had those three things. I don't know where I put them, but you know, you just allow yourself to be however you are. And then you had those four steps, right? Oh, here they are. Well, be honest.
Yes.
You want to say them?
Sure.
Okay.
So a lot of it has to do with to avoid going, I call it a pity pit. You know, when you're on this edge of a pity pit or you don't know how to deal with a situation, it's kind of like be honest with yourself about how you feel about it. And what this situation is as much as you can determine. And then the next step always for me is to examine the resources. You know, what resources do I have to address this issue? And I call it getting people in the boat with you. Like, who can help you through this adversity, this challenge or whatever? And I invite, you know, experts in there. And when I say experts, they could be my sister, they could be my friend, they could be a physician, they could be a therapist, whoever has expertise that I think can help me get through that challenge. And then I make a kind of a rethinking what I can do to address the issue and make a plan for that. So that's it's been helpful to me, especially the getting the people in the boat with you, because different people can be in that boat. It's not always the same people that can help you through, right? But once you have the resources and kind of make the plan, that keeps you moving forward. And I think that's always the risk we have, is to just stay in our pity, stay in the problem, and to get that forward motion, kind of those three steps of getting, being honest with ourselves, seeing who can help us, rethinking what's possible and moving forward, that keeps that momentum going forward. And that's what I found to be helpful. And
yeah.
So thank glad you were angry.
Yeah, I love that. Because, you know, I've been stopped before, and I think accepting my feelings, allowing my feelings, allows me to move through it. Thinking I shouldn't feel that way gets me stuck. But anyway, we are, believe it or not, at the end here. And I just want, I can't believe it's already wow. The end. Yeah, we have a minute. What would you like to leave people with? What, like, if you could impact the world with this book, how would you like to What would be your impact that you would want to have?
Gosh, I would say for this book is it's a way to stay fortified. And, you know, that's always my goal, is to live fully in whatever life I have. And it's doesn't have to be a daily reader. It can be a pickup whenever you need to be a little fortification, you know, to just keep being inspired, encouraged, and thinking. You know, that's the lens that I wrote it. And I hope that's the lens it can be received, is that you feel inspired, encouraged, or have made you think a little bit.
Mm. Thank you, Becky. Thank you so much. Thank you for who you are. Thank you for writing the book. This is amazing and amazing. Get it for yourself, but then get like 5 copies and give them out. It'll be right for the Christmas season. You know, people, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to insult anyone, but leave it in the bathroom. You know what I mean? Read a page in the morning when you're going to the bath. I mean, whatever, wherever you'll see it. But buy a few, give it away. It's such a great book. It'll make you think. It'll make you, encouraged, inspired, and fortified. So I totally recommend it. So thank you, Becky, for coming back again. It's always a pleasure. And anything you want to say, just to say goodbye?
Just thank you so much for having me again. It's always great to see you. You inspire me and encourage me.
And what? Sorry.
And make me think. You do. Good.
Yeah. Yay. And we're getting real. So thank you. Yeah. All right.
Take care. Thanks again.
Thank you, everyone. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Thank you for watching this episode. I started getting real with Hillary when I discovered that I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together. If you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.